penitentiary. The New York Times described it as a model prison that would correct the evils of the past. The inscription, placed in 1933, read, "Those who are laying this cornerstone today hope that the treatment which these unfortunates will receive in this institution will be the means of salvaging some lives which would otherwise have been wasted." As the decades passed, this purported icon of penology became a forbidding place indeed. Detainees were thrown or jumped from the upper tiers to their deaths, so those floors had to be closed. Violence ruled. And over time, it became known by the jailed as the House of Dead Men. But the city stuck with Rikers as the place to leave the people society had deemed worthy of incarceration, the vast majority poor and of color. It was out of sight, hard for visitors to reach, closed, and foreboding. For some of the hundreds of thousands of souls who have made the passage over the past 5 decades, a trip to Rikers may be the first time they will sleep somewhere away from home. For others, it's their only chance for a bed and a warm meal. For some, it might be the place where they find themselves fighting for their lives. And still others may never make it out. The memories of their first day on Rikers are ingrained in the minds of the people who worked, visited, and served time there. It's an experience no one forgets. Grace Price, detained 2011.
They literally arraigned me at midnight. It was me and 3 other people on the bus to Rikers. There was this little crackhead lady falling asleep on my shoulder on the way across the bridge. She was nasty. But I just let her sleep there because it somehow made me feel like I was actually in control of my situation.
Colin Absalom, detained 1993 to 1996.
Going back and forth on those DOC buses over that bridge was traumatic. The bridge is very narrow, and you're caged up, shackled. If the bus happened to go off that bridge and fall into the water, everyone would die. I mean, the correction officers would get out, but you're in a cage. They would have to open the cage and get the shackles off. There wouldn't be enough time to do that before you drowned.
Grace Price.
The guards on the bus were horrible. I just kind of sat there quietly sobbing. The guards hated me for that because they didn't like to hear a hysterical woman.
Yusef Salam, detained 1989 to 1994, Central Park 5 case.
I can't really describe in words this horror and this horrible feeling coupled with that horror, but it had a lot to do with the smell of the place. When we're talking about a place that smelled like death, vomit, urine, feces, and like the bad train stations in New York City, all wrapped up in one. And one of the first encounters I had with somebody coming up to me while I was inside the holding cell, they were asking me to check out my watch. And I didn't realize this, but they were trying to steal the watch from me. And I remember the Central Park 5 co-defendant, Antron McRae, saying, "No, don't let them check your watch, man. You know what I'm saying? Like they're trying to get you. This is a trick, you know?"
Donovan Drayton, detained 2007 to 2012.
I was 19 years old. I'd never been through prison before. I've been through some difficult things, but walking into the unknown and not knowing what's waiting for you, it's one of the scariest things. And once you actually get inside and see how it's running and operating, the environment and all the chaos, you're just like, wow, this is a whole nother world.
Eddie Rosario, detained 1990.
When people ask me what is being locked up like, the most horrible thing about being locked up is that you are being dehumanized on a daily basis. They practically stamp a number on you. In order to navigate the experience, you have to normalize the dehumanization. You have to buy into it in order to survive. That is the most horrible thing about being locked up. You're never the same person again. Once you internalize it, you project it outward. If you are being dehumanized,